Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday, May 26th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules, and it will feel like the Rules Committee today if it hasn't up until now. So we have a lot of territory to cover. We have a lot of people who want to talk on bills, and we have a lot of bills to move out, and we're going to start with SCR 17, and Aaron, do you want to briefly tell us what it is, and then Speaker Roblin and Senator Cruz, if you would join us at the dais, that would be great. And I'll open a public hearing on SCR 17.
Thank you, Madam Chair. SCR 17 memorializes Andy Jackson, 1944 to 2011.
Welcome to the Rules Committee.
And thank you very much. This is both a sad... I am the state representative from District 9, Arnie Roblin, for the record. So thank you very much, and thanks for reminding me. It's a sad and a moment when we can recognize people who were major influences in our communities. This year has been fairly tragic for us in Coos County in that we have lost two of our county commissioners in the last few months and been going through the process of putting new people there who are trying to get up to speed and work. But we're here to memorialize Andy Jackson, who, here's the last time he was here in the Capitol, we had a picture taken. He was our sheriff and what we affectionately called a bear of a man. He was athletic and imposing. He rose in rank in our county as a deputy up to the commander of our jail, and was one of those people, when you first met him, if you were on the wrong side of the law, he had an intimidating and imposing presence, which helped keep things in order. And when you got to know him, you knew he had this huge heart, that he was about helping people make good decisions and always there when you had kids around. We got to meet with him with our schools. He was always approachable and had a great sense of humor, a wonderful community member. And he decided when he retired in 2010 that he was going to run for county commissioner. And he was so well loved in our community that that was a kind of an overwhelming win for him without actually doing a whole lot. People just knew him. And if you knew him, you liked him. So that led us to him being elected and starting as county commissioner, and it was very shortly after that that he had a heart attack and died. And we're here to say he was a very unique individual and a person who was just Andy. They talk about in the memorial he was the first African-American sheriff in Oregon, but that was never something that he wore. He was a sheriff, and that's it. As a couple people said in his at his funeral service, he liked to drive fast, too. And so when people would head off to go from one place to the other, if they didn't have a head start, Andy was always there first. And oftentimes, even if they had a head start, Andy was there first because he wanted to get his work done. He cared about our community. He cared about our people. And we are, I hope that this memorial can move quickly through the Senate and get to the House. I am honored to be here to speak on his behalf and on this memorial, and really honored to have Senator Cruz here with me as well. So, thank you.
Senator Cruz.
Speaker Roblin, for the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1. Andy's been a friend of mine for a long time, and it was a shock and a tragedy when we lost him. Because he would have been a great county commissioner.
I agree.
Speaker Roblin did mention the fact that the events in Coos County have been striking and unique, to say the least. And so we have the loss of two county commissioners. So Speaker Roblin and I kind of teamed up on this because it just so happened we each had a priority bill left, and so that's why we started the one for Nikki Whitty in the House and the one for Andy here in the Senate. But what I want you to know is that he's got to go meet with the governor. I don't know what that's all about. I told him I'd take his place, but he... So. But anyway, our plan, I just want the committee to know what our plan is to expedite this bill to the floor of the Senate so that we can get it over to the House, so that we can have the ceremony for both families at the same time in the House chamber. And so we won't do the celebratory things for Andy here other than acknowledge him on the floor and coordinate all of those activities once the bills are on the floor of the House. The House Rules Committee passed out the one for Nikki Whitty last week, and of course, obviously, it's on Speaker Roland's desk now. So it would be my request of the committee to expedite it, move it out today, and let's get it across our floor and in the possession of the president or the Speaker of the House as soon as possible. I won't take up any more time. There are several other folks here that want to speak highly of Andy. So thank you for hearing this and expediting this, and so we can honor these two very wonderful Oregonians who are sorely missed on the coast at the same time in a ceremony in the House.
Thank you very much, Senator Cruz. Thank you for bringing this to us. And you're right, we do have several people signed up, and I will call them all. That's Sheriff Gil Gilbertson, Sheriff Tom Bergen, Paul Snyder, and Mike MacArthur. If you'd all like to come forward, that would be great. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And whichever of you would like to go first, please start right in.
If I may, Sheriff Gilbertson, Josephine County. I only knew Andy for about 6 years, and he was a proud man, and he was what we call a sheriff. First time I met him, I walked in wearing a hat in the building. He said, drop and give me 20. He had a tremendous sense of humor. We're here today representing the 36 sheriffs in the state of Oregon. I'm here to support Senate Concurrent Resolution 17 in recognition of a retired sheriff, Andrew Jackson. Like many of us across the state, Oregon sheriffs felt an overwhelming sense of loss when Sheriff Jackson passed away suddenly in February of this year, or 2010, I'm sorry. This year. Andy had retired as the Coos County Sheriff in December of 2010, having served for 33 years. Andy began his career in Coos County as a sheriff in 1977 as a corrections deputy. He eventually served as a civil deputy, a sergeant, a lieutenant, a jail commander, a captain, and finally the sheriff. His breadth of knowledge and experience with the sheriff's office made Andy an ideal candidate for sheriff. He was elected to that office in 1998 and served until his retirement in 2010. Andy was a committed public servant on a local and statewide basis. He was committed to the mission of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association and served on the association's board of directors from 2002 until his retirement, and represented the Oregon State Sheriff's Association on the Department of Public Safety and Standards Training Correction Curriculum Advisory Committee. The sheriffs of Oregon will fondly remember Andy for his years of dedicated public service, for his friendship, his infectious laugh, and his wonderful smile. Sheriff Jackson was a friend to everyone, and he took that approach in every facet of his life. He was kind to everyone, and he touched everyone who had the privilege to know him. As a sheriff of Josephine County and as Andy's friend, I respectfully request consideration and passage of Senate Concurrent Resolution 17. There is no one more deserving of the 76th Legislative Assembly's recognition than retired Sheriff Andrew Jackson. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. My name is Tom Bergen, Sheriff of Clatsop County. Welcome. I appreciate this opportunity to speak. And I also would like to say for the first time, which I never thought I would ever say, but bless you, Senator Burdick, for those sneezes you had earlier.
Thank you.
I found that to be a rare opportunity. So,
thank you.
Anyway, Andy and I went way back as well. I'm from the north part of the state. He's from the south. And he quite often would call me and ask me how his son was doing. And obviously I'm white, he was black. And we had a lot of good fun with that. And somebody mentioned that earlier, that he didn't care about the color of his skin. He was a sheriff first. And he would often call up and say, Tom, I got pulled over 9 times going through your county last week. What's up with that? You think it's something to do with the color of my skin? I said, oh, absolutely, Andy. You know, we're a bunch of rednecks up here. So he was beyond it's words cannot explain this man. And he was an intelligent man, a caring man, a great sheriff. And I just ask that you support this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder with Association of Oregon Counties and also supporting Senate Concurrent Resolution 17. I knew Andy Jackson for a period of several years in his capacity as sheriff and my capacity as AOC sheriff's liaison. And I would attend the sheriff's conference as often as I could, usually every year. And I enjoyed his company. He was cordial, he was warm, he was friendly, and yet I could see the firmness that was there if you ever got on the wrong side of him, but it was in a very, very gentle kind of way. When he became a commissioner, when he ran for commissioner in 2010, he participated in a program that we provide called New Commissioner Orientation. And it's basically to give folks some sense for what it means to be a county commissioner. What does county government involve? What are the aspects of it that you really need to know from the first day forward so you don't get into trouble? And for most new commissioners, it's kind of overload. That was not the case for Andy, obviously. He knew county government very well already. And yet the comments that he made, the insights that he shared, I remember after we finished with that first day of new commissioner orientation, talking with other members of our staff and saying, you know, he is really insightful. I'm going to really enjoy watching him work as a county commissioner. Little did I know that that opportunity was never really going to come. And I just very much appreciated the public service that he provided, the attitude that he showed toward everybody that I ever knew him in contact being with. And I just recommend this measure to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Mike MacArthur, Executive Director, Association of Oregon Counties, here also in support of SCR 17. I can't think of a more fitting day to consider this particular resolution, given all the other recognition of public service that was going on here today. As we began to work to put this resolution together, and really thank Senator Cruz for using his priority to do that, I began to think about what these things mean. And certainly they are a statement to the family and the friends of our caring about that person, and certainly it means something at one level. But at another level, I think it says something about what we're singling out as a state and a people as exemplary service. And I can't think of anyone who gave the state more exemplary service than did Sheriff Jackson. Here's a picture of him as a commissioner in our program called New Commissioner Training. Beyond the orientation, Andy Jackson was enrolled in what we called County College. After 33 years in law enforcement, this man still had a passion for public service. So I urge you to move this thing forward. Really appreciate your consideration of it today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I don't see anyone else signed up to testify, so I'll close the public hearing on SCR 17, open a work session on SCR 17. Vice Chair Ferrioli, did you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I do. Please, Madam Chair, I move SCR 17 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
And Senator Ferrioli moves SCR 17 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And we will ask Senator Cruz to carry this on the floor. And I'll close the work session on SCR 17. And I'll open a public hearing and work session on SB 10. And Aaron, could you please briefly tell us about this?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 10 clarifies whether provisions that reference regular legislative session of Legislative Assembly apply to even-numbered or odd-numbered regular legislative session of the Legislative Assembly, declares emergency is effective upon passage. The measure has no revenue nor fiscal impact.
Great. Thank you, Aaron. And I see that our very own, very busy Legislative Counsel, Dexter Johnson, has joined us. If you'd like to come forward.
Madam Madam Chair, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. And to be candid, this bill is very straightforward, and I have little to add from what Aaron described. It, as you know, the Constitution was amended to require the legislature to meet annually, and this changes those sections of existing law in which it was ambiguous as to whether a reference to session meant every session or every odd-numbered session, odd-numbered year session. So that's essentially what this bill does. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that brief explanation. Any questions for Dexter? Okay. Looks like you're scot-free and free to go back to work. Thank you very much. And I don't see anyone else signed up to testify. And members, we are in a work session on Senate Bill 10. Motion.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 10 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Farrioli moves Senate Bill 10 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Motion carries. And is there a volunteer to carry this on the floor?
Senator Atkinson,
would you like to carry Senate Bill 10?
I'd be delighted.
It's a great number. Okay. Senator Atkinson will carry this on the floor, and I'll close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 10. So, shall we just go there now? Okay. Okay, next I will open a work session on Senate Bill 159. And members, we heard this bill some time ago. We do have an amendment, and I think Aaron will give us a brief explanation, and we have some written testimony for the record, too.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 159 was heard on March 17th in a public hearing. Senate Bill 159 makes payment for signature gathering for initiative a referendum petition based on number of signatures obtained for violation of wage and hour statutes, permits Commissioner of Bureau and Labor of Industries to assess a civil penalty for unlawful deductions of employee wages. You do have a -1 amendment. It removes the ability to assess the civil penalty for unlawful deduction of employee wages for measure. We did receive a minimal fiscal impact on the measure and a no revenue impact on the -1. We have got written testimony, and it was distributed to you from Common Cause and from the Secretary of State.
Okay, and members, just I do see that the head of the Elections Division is in the room, but I think the written testimony from them is from the Secretary of State expressing support for Senate Bill 159, and that came forward because some questions came up at our initial hearing about how this function in Boley would dovetail and complement what the Secretary of State is already charged with doing. So we don't have anything else other than the written testimony and the amendment. Members, is there any discussion, or should we go to a motion? Seeing no discussion, Senator Beyer, did you have a motion on the amendment?
Madam Chair, I move the adoption of the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 159.
Senator Beyer has moved the -1 amendment into Senate Bill 159. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Is there any objection? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 159 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 159 as amended with the -1 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Discussion.
Yes, go ahead, Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, I understand there was a discussion based on whether or not the rules for implementing this bill, if it becomes a law, would comport well with what the Secretary of State is currently doing. I understand that it will. Is that your understanding, Madam Chair?
That is my understanding. I've had discussion with the Secretary of State, and I think the letter from the Secretary of State reflects that as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Mike, would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
No.
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
Senator Burnett?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farrioli?
Aye.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Motion carries. And I think the chair will carry this on the floor. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 159. And moving right along, I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 412A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 412 provides authorized tribal police officers with certain powers and protections provided to Oregon law enforcement officers. Declares emergency is effective upon passage. This measure was originally heard in the Senate Committee on Judiciary on the 24th of March and on April 7th, and did come to us from the Senate floor on the 20th of April. What you have before you is two amendments, a dash 88 amendment. The amendment creates transitional approach to grant of state law enforcement authority to tribal police officers, provides specific authority for the first 2 years, limited to three situations outside Indian country, hot pursuit, commission of crime in officer's presence, and upon request or approval of law enforcement agency with jurisdiction, and unrestricted within Indian country. Sunsets these provisions July 1, 2013, provides tribal officers with state law enforcement authority equivalent to other law enforcement agencies for the following 6 years, sunsetting July 1, 2019, and reverting to existing law as currently enunciated in Kurtz, defines Indian country. You also have the dash 9 amendment, which adds further condition to receipt of authorization to enforce state law, requiring tribal governments to adopt written policies to facilitate conformity with states' discovery obligations in criminal cases, permits tribal government to make written requests to obtain copies of neighboring sheriff's policies, and if so, requires sheriffs to respond within 30 days, requires tribal government to adopt policy within 90 days of passage of measure if no written request made of neighboring sheriffs, provides exemption to this requirement if no neighboring sheriff has adopted the written policy. We did receive our fiscal and revenue statements on both amendments. The dash 9 has a no impact statement and a no revenue statement, and the dash 8 has no revenue statement and a no fiscal impact statement. Judiciary Council, who worked on this measure when it was in its original committee, is here if there are any questions about the work and discussion in that committee.
Okay, thank you, Aaron, for that explanation. And we were provided copies of both of these amendments. The Dash 8 is a pretty big amendment, so if you need a moment to look at it, we can certainly take time to do that, or if we need an explanation, I think we have staff in the room that can explain it. Senator Przanski was here earlier, but I believe he's in another committee and wasn't able to stay. So,
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I was present for the discussions on Senate Bill 412 and has conferred extensively with Senator Przanski on the Dash A8 amendments. And the Dash A8 amendments were designed primarily to phase in this expansion of authority into four tribal law enforcement officers into areas outside of Indian country. It was also to make sure that there was a indemnity up to the limits of liability that were similar or identical to other jurisdictional liability limitations. It was also discussed during the discussion leading up to the creation of this amendment how it was that tribal law enforcement officers, should they choose to be empowered off of Indian land, would be BPSST certified. As a matter of fact, the other amendment, which we imagine we'll discuss later, does a little bit different thing, and we can talk about that at the appropriate time. But this Dash A8 amendment was made to be particularly responsive to concerns that were raised by the sheriffs.
Thank you for that explanation, Senator Farioli. So we do have written testimony from Justin Martin that should be in front of you in your file in support of this version of the bill. And we are in a work session. Are we wishing to have committee staff come up and explain these amendments?
Madam Chairman, I think that would be beneficial for the record.
Great.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Cheyenne Ross. I staff the Judiciary Committee in both chambers. And I can't be heard.
Thank you for being here, Cheyenne. And if you want to briefly explain the amendment, that would be great.
If there is concern in particular, Madam Chair and members, about the length of the document, the Dash A8s, those of you who have seen Sunset, the way they operate, when you have provisions inserted in a number of sections of the statutes, the Sunset has to go back into each of those sections and enter the text that repeals. The Dash A8 amendment has two separate Sunset dates. It creates an 85-page long document. For practical purposes, it is all technical in going back into each separate statute and repealing twice.
Thank you. Well, that's helpful to explain why it got as voluminous as it is. Are there any questions for Ms. Roth? Looks like you've answered them all. Okay, thank you very much.
Madam Chair, would you like me to stay in case there are questions about the A9, Dash A9?
Yeah, that would be great. And did you want to just go ahead and say anything about the A9?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be responsive to questions
okay.
if there are any.
Well, Madam Chairman, we should discuss, while we're in work session, we should discuss the Dash A9s.
Right.
The Dash A9s, I believe, were in response to the Sheriff's concern that there was a difference in the ability to track documentation and to get response to FOIA and to discovery issues. And so the Dash A9s were constructed to specifically outline the policies and procedures by which the tribal law enforcement officers would respond to documentary requests for copies, for discovery, for Freedom of Information Act filings, and other documentary requests to bring tribal law enforcement administration into a standard or a very comparable situation to other law enforcement agency procedures and practices. And that was, again, in direct response to the issues that were raised by the law enforcement agencies.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. And Cheyenne, did you want to add anything to that?
Madam Chair, and members, if I may, that in addition to requiring the adoption of the policies that facilitate criminal discovery is made an additional condition. The grant of authority that's contemplated by Senate Bill 412 is based on certain conditions being met, as you can see from the measure, and it adds that as one of those conditions.
Thank you. Any questions for committee staff? Okay. Thank you. It looks like
Thank you.
You have answered them all. Okay. Members, we are in a work session.
Madam Chairman, I move the adoption of the Dash A8 amendments to Senate Bill 412A.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the Dash AA amendment to Senate Bill 412A. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, amendment is adopted. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash A9 amendments to Senate Bill 412A.
Senator Ferrioli moves the Dash A9 amendment to Senate Bill 412A. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection? Amendment is adopted. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chairman, I move the Senate Bill 412A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli has moved Senate Bill 412A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to commend the work group for all the work they put into this effort. It's very rare to sit with a group of folks who disagree so completely on an issue and see such sincerity and goodwill among people. There's honest differences of opinion embodied in the objections that the sheriffs have brought to this issue, but I will point out that there's a letter that I do not see in the file from Governor Kitzhaber, which discusses the need for 412 to implement certain aspects of the Kurtz decision. We've also conferred with attorneys both inside our legislative process and with private attorneys representing some of the parties, and they are absolutely convinced that SB 412 is absolutely necessary to the proper administration of the Kurtz decision, which confers additional additional authorities onto tribal law enforcement officers. In addition to those issues, there was a lengthy discussion about how there's a jurisdictional interface between Indian country and other areas, and it's most interesting and fascinating to understand the limits of jurisdiction that all agencies have to face. For instance, all of us have come to know that there are limits to our jurisdictional authorities, and that is no different for tribal officers or non-Indian law enforcement as well. What makes this such an interesting discussion and such an interesting public policy question is that tribal members have citizenship rights within tribal areas, absolutely. And they also are citizens of the state of Oregon and citizens of the United States of America. Non-Indians are citizens of Oregon and citizens of America, but they are not citizens of Indian land or tribal members. And so there is a clear difference between the kinds of authority that can be conferred on tribal officers and non-tribal officers by the legislature. In other words, because we have certain limitations of relative to the nations within a nations, it is not within the legislative authority to convey police powers on certain Indian lands, simply not within our authority to do so. And that's been quite clear from the discussions that we've had and the research that we've done. So, Madam Chair, even though there are folks that will never accept the fact that there are limitations to their authority, that is a fact at law. And there is no question that if that were tested, that would prove to be accurate. What I believe that 412 does with the amendments that were drafted by Senator Prozanski is gives an opportunity for folks to step into a new relationship between tribal and civil authority, and provides a fail-safe at the other end of the process because there's a sunset in this bill. So, Madam Chair, the Native American tribes have accepted virtually all of the changes suggested by the sheriffs, with the exception of the grant of reciprocity, which is beyond the power of this jurisdiction or this agency or this legislature to grant. So, Madam Chair, I believe the bill should move forward to do pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. And just to clarify again for members, we do have two amendments that we adopted into the bill, the Dash A8 and the Dash A9, and it could be a little confusing if you looked before you got here because the Dash A9 arrived today, and so we do have a staff measure summary that reflects both of those amendments, and they have both been evaluated as having no fiscal. So everything is in order. And further discussion. And I would just add my my word of thanks to Senator Farioli and Senator Prozanski for working diligently on what is a very complicated issue and coming to what I think is a good compromise. Okay. Mike, would you please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
No.
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farioli?
Aye.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Farioli, would you like to carry this on the
floor? Madam Chair, I think I would enjoy the able assistance of Senator Prozanski as a co-carrier.
Yes, that sounds great. So we will have co-carriers, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 412. We have one bill remaining, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 960. And Aaron, as people are rearranging the chairs and shuffling papers, please go ahead and explain this bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 960. Well, we actually have a measure, an amendment that replaces the measure as is, and so, and Mr. Whitman is here to walk you through that amendment, so I'll let him do so, but I will say there is a chart in front of you that has tried to outline the provisions of the measure in a simple format to understand the different event requirements and what their limitations are. We have received written testimony from friends of Yamhill County, and on the Dash 8 amendment, there is a minimal fiscal impact and a no revenue impact. And I will see the floor.
Great, thank you. So members, as you just heard, we have an amendment which does replace this bill, and I see Richard Whitman is in the room. So if you would like to come forward at our request, and we do have other people, even though we're in a work session, we will take testimony on this, so.
Madam Chair, for the record, Richard Whitman, Governor's Natural Resource Advisor. With your permission, I'd like to invite up County Commissioner Mary Stern from Yamhill County and Arch Slack from the Association of Oregon Counties with me to help explain the amendments to the bill.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, I think we want to give you a very brief description of the process that led us to today with this bill, and Commissioner Stern is going to do that, and then I'm going to do a very quick overview of what this bill does for you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Mary Stern. I'm a Yamhill County Commissioner. Thank you for having us here today. Many counties were encountering problems with events occurring on farmland. Some were allowed, some were not allowed under Oregon law. And so we all started discussing these issues to figure out how we could find some solutions. Really, the goal in mind was how do we balance conservation on farmland and the need of farmers to use their land in beneficial yet non-traditional ways. And we had the Association of Oregon County appointed me chair of a task force, the Farmland Activities Task Force, and we had about 15 commissioners on that task force, as well as agency heads and many interested parties. All voices were heard and considered, but not everyone got what they wanted, as I'm sure you're used to here. And Art, do you want to add anything to that?
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I too want to thank you for hearing this bill today. And I've had the pleasure, I think, of talking to each one of you about the proposal at this point. What the task force found is that really, given the existing state statute and administrative rules, there was a lack of clarity in terms of the role and responsibility and authority for counties to look at permitting events and activities on farmland. And so this is an effort and a recommendation to you from the Association of Oregon Counties through the task force to provide counties with the authority and the opportunity to look at events and activities on farmland, deal with, I'll call it the sideboards, and look at not only preserving agriculture, but also compatibility issues with the community at this point. And Richard's going to go through the details, and if you have questions, I'll be happy to help answer those as I staff the task force.
Great, thank you. And before we do that, I see that we've been joined by the original sponsor of the bill, Senator Thompson, and we were about to hear an explanation of the amendment, but if you would like to come forward and share some thoughts, that would be great.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Great. Thanks for having me. Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26, Hood River, Clackamas County. I arrived here. I cannot take credit for all the good work that's been done on this bill. It started in the interim last year, and I heard about it as a county commissioner from Hood River. It worked really well, and when I arrived here, they asked me to sponsor the bill. And after a little bit of thought, I wondered why would they do that for a freshman senator. Well, I wondered, why didn't anybody else sign up for this one? Well, being a county commissioner of land use laws, I figured it out really quick. Anyway, so I cannot take the credit for this. I did get to work on the work group that worked on this all session long. I witnessed some very good collaboration, a lot of give and take, and I think they've hammered it out to where it could be a very good bill. Although I can't take credit for it, being my name's on there, I will probably take all the blame. So I know that this has been a very good bill, and I support it wholeheartedly, and thanks for hearing it and working it out in your Rules Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. And we can tell you're a freshman because people take credit for other people's work or things they had nothing to do with all the time around here.
I'm doing my best to learn. And I think what sold me on this bill was it's a state thing, but counties don't have to put it in their plan if they don't want to, and that's what gave me the option or gave me the opportunity to put my name on there, because if counties or there are counties out there that are happy with what's happening on their in farm activities, and if they don't want to apply these, they don't have to. So we can, we also, as state senators and members, we necessarily won't take all the blame. We can blame it on our county commissioners for accepting it. Don't tell anybody that one. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much for being here. So please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. I want to say just a little bit about the role of the Department of Land Conservation and Development in this effort. DLCD participated in the AOC work group, largely is really sort of helping as staff almost, helping develop the proposal. This is a little bit of a different approach to some of our resource land conflicts in the state. We made a conscious decision here to let AOC take the lead on this work group in pulling this proposal together. Commissioner Stern's done a great job doing that, and not purposely not have the state out in front, but playing a facilitating role here. So I think I'm very pleased with how this has worked, and want to extend my thanks both to Mary and Arch Slack for their work and the work of other members of the work group. This bill provides a clear way for counties to authorize things on farmland that are already happening. We already have many events, and right now with springtime, as you drive up and down I-5, you see all the signs. There are a lot of things going on out there right now on farmland. Those can be legally authorized in a variety of ways under existing law, but it's extremely confusing, it's very complicated, and frankly, it's a series of traps for people who are not familiar with our land use system. So the purpose of this bill is to provide a clear pathway that's understandable for our average farmer, frankly, who just wants to have a commercial event on their property, one that's consistent with what's going on around him or her. It's an authority that is provided to counties if they want to use. It's not a mandate from the state. It's a tool that they can choose to use, and it is in addition to existing ways that these types of events can be authorized. The bill only addresses commercial events. So it does not involve, if you want to have a wedding in your backyard and you're not charging for it, this bill does not address those issues. It's only events where people are charging a fee. It's a commercial event. The main parts of the bill are to provide three pathways for a property owner to authorize events on their property. The first pathway is designed to be as simple as possible. It's for a property owner who wants to do one of these events in a calendar year. There are actually two ways they can do that. One is a simple, almost over-the-counter license that they can get if they meet certain standards that are set forth in the statute that were designed to assure that the event is small enough that it will not conflict with neighbors or neighboring farm practices. If they don't meet those set standards, then for a single event, they can still go forward, but there's more process, a little bit more review. So that's the first pathway through. It's just for somebody who wants to do a single activity or event on their property. Important qualification on these are that they're personal to the individual. They do not transfer with sale of the land, and they do not authorize any permanent structures or alterations of the land. The second pathway through is for somebody who wants to do more than one, and it's up to six of these in a calendar year. And essentially, that is allowed. It's still personal to the individual landowner, but there are some more standards that are applied when we're having more of these go on. It has to be incidental and subordinate to an existing farm use. And again, it has to be personal and no structures. It also has to get reviewed for lack of conflict with farm practices on adjoining property, and reviewed so that the county can make a determination that there aren't so many of these going on that it's starting to change the farming character of the area. That's basically the second pathway, up to six. The third is up to 18. So up to 18 or events or activities that don't fit within some of the other limitations that exist on the first two pathways. In particular, there's a 72-hour limit for the first two. So for somebody who wants to do more of these or for a longer event, we provide this what Art calls the third leg of the stool. And there, again, it's the same sort of concept, same standards that I just articulated, but it also adds in that the permit is only for a two-year period and then has to be reviewed and renewed by the county. So the county, after a two-year period, gets to look at it and see whether this is something that should be continued or not. These permits for the third type do run with the land. They're not personal. That's part of the reason for the two-year review. And also the other distinction on the third, and this is one of the areas where there's still some disagreement among some of the groups, is that 72-hour time limit doesn't exist. And that's purposeful. We want, if somebody wants a longer event, we need to have some pathway for that to get reviewed by the county and determine whether or not that's appropriate. It's going to be up to the county to set a time limit and decide what works given the other standards in the bill. So those are that's the main part of the bill right there. There are a couple of other provisions in the bill. One is a clarification with regard to wineries, another subject that we're continuing to work on right now, that clarifies that if a winery is using these authorizations for events, they can use this pathway to authorize events at wineries, but they can't use both this pathway and whatever is authorized for wineries also. They have to choose one or the other. And then there are also some provisions in here that provide that at a couple of our very large wineries in the state where some of these activities have occurred, really recognizing the lack of clarity in our law, just nailing that those activities can continue lawfully and that this legislation doesn't interfere with that. So those are the main aspects of the bill. I went through pretty quickly. I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have about the bill.
Okay. Well, it is complicated, and
yes,
that was certainly a good overview. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, and then other members may have as well. So the permits are valid for 2 years, but they're reviewed every 4 years. So I don't get how those two things go together.
Chair Rosenbaum, if I might, I might respond to that question. The what I characterize as the second leg of the stool, which is for the up to six, those permits, when issued, are good for 2 years, and they have to be renewed. Okay?
So the person who got that up to six, they would get that permit renewed, and so they would go through the process again. For the third leg of the stool that runs with the land, it does run with the land, but it is reviewed on a four-year cycle at the request of the applicant with notice to adjacent property owners, and the review is limited to the activities that were requested and the conditions of approval to assure that the activities are consistent with what has been approved, and it's not having a more a greater impact on the community at this point.
And if I might, Madam Chair, just one clarification on that. So thank you, Art. The four-year review for the third leg of the stool, has the applicant, the holder of the permit, must request that review. So it's not discretionary. It has to happen every 4 years.
So that's a mandatory review.
Yes.
And in other words, with the two-year permit having to be renewed, there's a sort of review at the renewal process for
right.
that permit,
correct.
Too, because it might not be granted
yes.
on renewal.
Yes, but we wanted to make sure, Senator Rosenbaum, that the renewal wasn't looking at, you know, the question of should this activity take place at all, but limited to the conditions of approval and that which they indicated that they were going to do. If they all of a sudden started adding to the activities, then they would be subject to an additional application.
And then, thank you, that clears that up. And then the other question I had, and I think you tried to cover this, but it just hasn't sunk in for me, the 72-hour limit applies only to certain parts of this and not to other parts, is that correct?
Yes.
Can you go over that again?
Yeah, Chair Rosenbaum, the 72-hour limit applies to somebody who is seeking a authorization for a single event. It also applies to the second pathway up to six events. If somebody is seeking authorization for an event, even if it's a single event that's going to be more than 72 hours, they're going to have to come in through that third pathway, the more rigorous review. And so that's on purpose. The standards will be higher, but there is no set time limit. Basically, the conflict issues are addressed by having those additional qualitative standards for review of what's being proposed.
Chair Rosenbaum, so in that third leg, if someone wanted just 48 hours, many events, multiple events for shorter duration or even longer duration, that would be considered at the time of application under that third leg of the stool.
Okay. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much for the explanation and for the testimony. And we are in a work session, but I think because this is a replacement of the original bill and we hadn't heard it before, we're going to allow other people who might like to testify to do so. So is Steve McCoy or someone from Thousand Friends in the room? Great. Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. I am Steve McCoy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I want to start out and say that we have been working with AOC on this bill for some time. We do continue to have some concerns with it. We feel like we're getting close here. But I would like to talk about two issues that we do have remaining. One is what was just being discussed, that the third leg of the stool does not have any sort of time limit on it. We felt like a 72-hour limit for the 18 events, that would give you 54 days of events. We felt like that was reasonable, and we requested that. Another thing that we requested was Mr. Whitman talked about the series of traps that the other ways of approving events could be in Oregon's land use law. Those would be under home occupations, private parks, commercial activities in conjunction with farm use. What we requested was that for counties that choose to use this new path, that this new path would be in lieu of those other paths to get events and activities, so that an event venue, for example, couldn't double dip and get events from multiple ways. We'd love to keep working on this. We have had productive conversations, however, we do oppose it in its current form.
Okay, any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to please come forward?
Sure. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. The Farm Bureau participated in the development of this language, the replacement language to the bill. We feel very comfortable with where the language has taken us and very comfortable with the process so far. This bill and Farm Bureau support for a bill like it is a departure from some of the positions Farm Bureau has taken in the past regarding Oregon's land use statutes. Often in the past, new listed activities would be proposed to this assembly, and because of the way our statute is constructed, it encourages a new list that's not explicitly provided, or a new item to be added to that list in statute. This is a better approach. It's not specific to any particular activity. It's permissive to the county. And it will allow a lot of agricultural producers to do small, very limited events on their farms, which will help supplement their income, which is an important thing for Oregon agricultural producers in many parts of the state who have a hard time making ends meet from time to time. I will say that one of the interests that the Farm Bureau has in this bill is ensuring that the language of the bill is clear to those voting on the measure, that commercial activities in conjunction with a farm use, those types of activities would be generally seasonal activities, such as a pumpkin patch, would not be suddenly categorized as an event under this statute, that those are permitted uses, very valuable marketing activities for producers, especially in the metro area, and that nothing in this bill would modify or change those permitted activities. There is language in the bill, in this substitute measure, that clarifies that that would not occur, and in doing so, we would advocate against a Thousand Friends' earlier point about trying to amend this bill to provide one path or another. There are some crossovers in some of those commercial activities, and again, this being a permissive language in the statute allowing a county to adopt or not adopt, we feel that this is a good approach, and with that, I'll end my testimony and take any questions you might have.
Okay. I think we'll hear from both of you and then open it up for questions.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of King Estate Winery, and we were participants in the work group. Very much appreciated the opportunity to be involved. Wanted to go on the record voicing our support. Richard Whitman spoke earlier to wanting to ensure that the legislation didn't have any unintended consequences, and we're very well satisfied with the state of this legislation and urge you to move it forward. Thank you.
Okay, any questions for these witnesses? Okay, thank you both for being here. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 960? Okay. Seeing no one. Members, we are in a work session. Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I would move the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 960.
Thank you, Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 960. Is there... yes, she may be just outside. Members, why don't we be at ease for just a moment? For us to adopt the Dash 8 amendments into Senate Bill 960.
Okay, I vote aye on that.
Okay, so Senator Burdick votes aye, and is there objection to the amendment? Okay, the amendment is adopted. And Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 960 as amended by the Dash 8 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 960 with the Dash 8 amendments to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion? I suppose we should, well, we will show Senator Atkinson as excused. Motion carries. And we'll ask Senator Thompson, since he is the sponsor, to carry on the floor.
We'll make it complete.
See if he takes credit or blame or neither. Okay. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 960. Super. Members, that does complete our agenda, but I wanted to mention a couple of things. One is that next Thursday, our regular meeting time, we have a chock full list of executive appointments from the governor that will be probably our last big list of executive appointments, and there may be a couple more that come in after that, but I think we've already got, and this has been made public to the entire Senate now, a pretty healthy list. So that will take up our whole hearing. Because we are getting later and later in the session, and we are on 1 hour notice now, we may add an additional hearing next week. Aaron is scoping out your schedules and the floor schedule to see when the best time to do that, but I think that would be either Tuesday or Wednesday, so she'll be contacting your office if we do need to do that. So just stay tuned, and thank you for your patience and attention today. With nothing further to come before us, members, we're adjourned.